This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 2nd of February, 2018. Well, hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker, who's been deported to Australia. Well, actually, no, he's visiting relatives, and I am assured that he will be back in this seat for his next session. Our editors this week are Sue Frayne, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And I'm joined by our three readers this week, Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And David Dalton.
Hello.
First, our regular notices. Now, if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone the lovely Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That is 01962 870370. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can either listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to it later. Or you can even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. Wow. Well, the main headlines for this week are Bid backs plans for new hotel, Their roosts have gone, but birds stay, and Campaign for Crossing. So, Margot, what are Bid backing?
Bidders are backing plans for a new hotel. A Winchester business chief has given her backing to plans for a new budget hotel in the city. Catherine Turnus, Winchester Business Improvement District's, that is BID, executive director, also said she would be willing to find tenants for the shops also included in the plans. As previously reported, plans have been submitted to develop a current vacant high street unit into a 62-bed travel lodge hotel, as well as three new retail units. It would occupy the former Next store at the bottom of the high street, next to Rick Stein's upmarket restaurant, and a short walk from the Cathedral and Winchester Guildhall. If approved, the site would undergo extensive redevelopment with, quote, dramatic changes to the visual appearance. The plans would keep the ground floor of the site as retail outlets, with a hotel sitting above and accessed via a foyer in Market Lane. The hotel would occupy space that was previously the second floor of Next and storage space. Responding to the plans, Miss Turnus said, "Tourism research has suggested for some time that there has been a need for more hotel beds in Winchester, and clearly the Bid would encourage a facility that allows visitors to stay longer and spend more in city centre businesses. As per the current plans submitted, the Bid would like to see the ground floor remain as retail, and note that the applicant has carried out research on possible tenants. But," she added, "I would expect that these would be national chains that can be very frustrating for independent businesses, as they tend not to get considered for units on the high street. We have suggested to the applicant that we would be pleased to work with them to help identify tenants for the site." Despite initial support for the plans lodged by the London Borough of Southwark Pension Fund, concerns have been raised about the lack of parking for the new hotel. However, a transport statement submitted with the plans argued that the city's current facilities are sufficient. The project has been designed by architects Haskell and a decision on whether to approve the plans is expected in March.
Thank you, Margot. Now, John, what is all this about roosting birds?
Well, the roosts have gone,
yes,
but the birds stay.
They haven't flown then.
They haven't. A flock of starlings have defied a bid to move them on by Hampshire County Council by remaining in the skies over Winchester. As previously reported, trees used by the starling Murmuration to roost in outside Winchester Fire Station in Winnell were cut down by the County Council last week in a bid to move them on. The move left residents furious, and although a protest due to take place on a Friday evening failed to materialise, more than a dozen people turned out at the station in Eastern Lane to see the starlings perform their spectacular aerial display. The trees were cut down by arboriculturalists from Arborcare UK Limited on behalf of Hampshire County Council at short notice last Tuesday morning. It is believed that the trees were chopped following complaints of the birds defecating on vehicles and nearby car parks. Philippa Grodon from Alsford had brought her sons down to Winnell to see the display. She said, "It's a lot smaller now. We came last year and this year we've already come a couple of times. By the end of February they stop anyway, if the council had just waited a bit longer. The display is amazing. It just seems so short-sighted." Following the felling of the trees, a number of people took to Twitter and called the Hampshire Chronicle to vent their anger. Esme Holding, a resident from Carmans Lane, Compton, called it underhand and wrong. "We have," she says, "one of the greatest natural phenomenon in Europe on our doorstep and we just get rid of it. There was no consultation, they just turned up with the van and started cutting them down." An RSPB spokeswoman added, "Instead of looking at ways we can force nature into an ever smaller space, we should look at how we can live alongside wildlife and help give it a home." Defending the decision, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services Facilities Manager Matt Robertson said, "The trees to the rear of Winchester Fire Station have been removed due to the impact they were having on operational vehicles and the health and safety of the staff. Hampshire County Council has been approached for comment but has not responded in time." And this article is accompanied by a remarkable photograph of this murmuration of starlings, hundreds if not thousands of them, as a big black mass against a pale blue clear sky.
I love that word, that new
murmuration.
Yes.
I said it well, didn't I?
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, excellent, John. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right, David, what's his campaign about a crossing?
Yes, a major Winchester road needs a new pedestrian crossing to ensure the safety of parents and children walking to school, say campaigners. Families living on Northlands Drive and nearby roads who want to walk to St. Bede's Primary School say they cannot cross Worthy Road safely. A pedestrian crossing, they say, would slow down vehicles exceeding the 30 mph speed limit, coming down the hill and having to brake just past Arthur Road. The location of a possible crossing has not yet been decided, but could be north of the current island by Arthur Road, which concerned residents hope will improve safety for the elderly, the disabled, and those with young children. A site assessment was conducted in December and concluded a full survey would be carried out. This is due to be completed in the spring and will be carried out over a 12-hour period to determine the number of pedestrians and vehicles that pass either side of the proposed crossing location. Parent Ben Duxbury of Salcott Road said, "This is a positive development and one which I and numerous families living nearby hope will lead to a crossing being built, but progress is slow And in the meantime, we have to run the gauntlet of crossing this busy road with children on a daily basis. I have experienced the stress of crossing the road with groups of young children via the islands and have had a couple of near misses. Mr. Duxbury added, attempting to cross with buggies and scooters or bikes is also incredibly challenging, as they often don't fit on the island itself, particularly with young children in tow. The height of the signs in the middle of the islands also block the view and eye line of the children. One local parent is wheelchair bound and struggles to cross the road every day with her children, often reliant on cars giving way in order to let her cross. She also cannot see over the signs in the middle and often has to peer round them, pushing herself into the road at the same time. He added that the heavy traffic flow at peak times could also increase further with the Barton Farm development being built off Andover Road. People often comment that pedestrian crossings only get built after there has been an accident or fatality, he said.
Thank you, David. Right, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, Joanna Lewis's column, Belgarum, what's on, and lighting up times. So we proceed with the death notices. Dalton, Cyril Frederick Dalton, peacefully at home, 26th of January, aged 85.
Gill, Joyce Gill, peacefully at the Royal, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 18th of January, aged 84.
Harwood, Rachel Joan Harwood, 21st of January, in her 94th year.
Hurd, William John Hurd, known as Bill, peacefully, 20th January, aged 84.
Howe, Lieutenant Colonel William, Maurice William Howe, OBE, RA, retired, peacefully, 19th of January, aged 98.
Lever, Peter Lever, peacefully, on 11th of January.
Peterson, Marjorie Mary Peterson, 12th of January, aged 87.
Silman, John Silman, 19th January, aged 83.
Simmons, Stanley Harold Simmons, 21st of January, aged 89.
Swain, Leslie Swain, on the 22nd of January, aged 94.
Talbot, Joyce May Talbot, peacefully, 24th of January, aged 74.
Thorns, Alan Thorns, peacefully, 23rd January.
Unsworth, Julie Ann Unsworth, 5th of January, aged 54.
Vince, Pamela Vince, peacefully on the 14th of January, aged 83.
Wake, Michael Stephen Wake, suddenly at home on the 11th of January, aged 72.
Woodley, Trevor Woodley, suddenly at Basingstoke Hospital, 13th January, aged 65.
Wyatt, Michelle Wyatt, nay Raymond, peacefully, 23rd of January, aged 58. And a couple of further notices. A memorial service for the former leader of Hampshire County Council, Ken Thornber, will be held in Winchester Cathedral on Friday, March the 2nd at 2 p.m. Mr. Thornber, who served on the council for 40 years, died last November after a long illness. He was leader from 1999 to 2013 and a councillor from 1977, retiring last May, aged 84. At the time of his death, Council Leader Roy Perry said he was a hugely respected politician, both locally and nationally. Anyone interested in attending is asked to contact the Council at memorial@hants.gov.uk. memorial@hants.gov.uk. And one last notice, and this concerns Our dear friend Val Burton, who I believe you already know, died earlier this month. Her service will be at Breach Farm Woodland Burial Ground, St Marybourne, on Wednesday, the 7th of February at 11 a.m. Right, well, what have we next? Oh, we have Christian comment. Written this week by the Reverend Graham Bowkett. What's he writing about this week, Margot?
Well, he entitles his comment, "The Loneliness of a Poetry Philistine." I'm not really much of a fan of poetry. I know how that sounds, like a Philistine. Like a grumpy old man who, for whatever reason, just wants to be grumpy. The thing is, I do like words. Well, some words. The ones on parking tickets I don't like. The ones on birthday cards are often nauseous, but sometimes, just sometimes, words in the form of poetry are amazing. I can't think of any, but apparently sometimes that's true. I quite like Tennyson's Ulysses. The idea of not wanting to rust unburnished, to strive, to seek, to find, is rather rousing. And of course, there is Henley's Invictus. But after that, I'm struggling. I know, to great disapproval, that I have consigned the works of Keats, Wordsworth, Larkin, D.H. Lawrence, and a fellow called Shakespeare et al., to the put a glass eyeball to sleep drawer in room 101. But I just don't seem to be able to stay interested, conscious, even breathing, when I read poetry. I once had to write a paper at Theological College about the Psalms. The Psalms are apparently poetry. I think it was perhaps the hardest thing I have ever had to do. To this day, when Psalm 119 is cited in the readings for daily devotions, I come out in a cold sweat. Robert Alter, a wise and distinguished American scholar, once wrote a book called The Art of Biblical Poetry from the Library of Congress Publishing, 1985, directly relating to the Psalms. He wrote under the heading of The Dynamics of Parallelism. Let me emphasize that the cognate patterns of movement from prosaic to poetic and literal to figurative locution are simply one recurrent instance of a more general development impulse of biblical verse. I have no idea what this means.
Good.
He writes that. I'm not saying it.
You knew, of course.
Of course. But I cite it because that's the most interesting part of the book. I read the whole thing. Surprise, surprise. It did not ignite a passion for biblical poetry. I'll spare you the rest. The thing is, I can move from literal to figurative and vice versa. I'm not a total troglodyte. I do understand ideas about how we communicate and how we use representation to describe and comprehend. How important and clever concepts and meaning can be. In fact, I can be deeply moved by what I comprehend, imagine, see, and read. For instance, there are many pieces of scripture that simply stir my soul. The first book of Hebrews, 11, verses 1 to 3, and the first Thessalonians, 5, verses 13 to 21, and James, chapter 2, verse 13. I could go on forever. But when reading John, chapter 19, verse 30, and comprehending the amazing thing that is being described, who cannot be astounded? We read of Jesus, crucified in agony on the cross, proclaiming to the world, "It is finished." Everyone, by God's love, freely delivered from the evil of this world. Staggering, breathtaking, amazing. Strangely, people would rather read poetry about being blown in the wind or glinting snow, or wandering on hill or vale surrounded by numerous daffodils. In fact, I know exactly how to convince you that poetry is bonkers. Rabbi Burns. So writes the Reverend Graham Bowkett, rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and area dean of Alsford.
Yes. Thank you, Marco. Now, we now have editorial comment, which... Oh, it's about roosting birds again.
Well, how strange and appropriate and apt. A thoughtless misuse of man's power is the headline of this editorial comment this week. Yes, that old excuse beloved of unaccountable bureaucrats everywhere. Health and safety. A fear of bird poo has seemingly led the county council or the fire service to, at public expense, and Freedom of Information request is on hand to find out how much, chop down trees used as a roost for starlings. Set aside for a moment that a starling murmuration is as spectacular a sight as herds of wildebeest on the Serengeti, the cutting down of the roost was a daft act. What exactly are the health and safety issues? Excrement landing on someone's head? Has any bureaucrat anywhere done a study to determine this risk? No, because there isn't one. Did the council or fire service think the birds would just disappear? No, they will simply try to move on, perhaps to the trees near the Royal Mail sorting office, about 100 yards away. Will those trees be felled on these spurious health and safety grounds? Where will it end? This is an example of man thoughtlessly misusing his power over nature. When will we learn that we have to live with the natural world, not try to corral and overpower it? Man has been doing that for hundreds of years, and look where it has got us. When police officers complained that their nice shiny cars were being spattered by excrement, someone with a bit of intelligence at the county council or fire service should have said, "Sorry, but tough. You'll just have to clean them a bit more."
Thank you, John. Now, David, we've got Joanna Lewis's column, please.
Yes, and she picks up on the murmuration. She begins, "So, Neanderthal man has struck again." Or has he? Would even he have been so thick-skulled and chopped down a line of trees that were temporary roosts for starlings, a species in decline whose spectacular displays of murmuration are famous all over the world? I refer to the trees felled last week at Winnell. Of course, no one in their right mind would want to come between a fireman and his fully functioning equipment. Let's hope no uniform was damaged during this episode. But surely Hampshire County Council could have found the resources, the will, and some arboriculturalists to solve the bird poo problem, not to be sniffed at, without hastily cutting down the trees. What unfolded was the mother of all PR disasters for all those involved. For such a crude response runs totally counter to the zeitgeist, the absolute need to act as custodians of our fragile planet and not to view wildlife and trees as a problem. We are the problem. On the very day the trees were felled and the birds made homeless, Sir David Attenborough collected the National Television Award for Impact with some of the men and women who spent 4 years making Blue Planet 2. There was hardly a dry eye in the audience. If our television programmes have helped stir the conscience of people around the world, the veteran wildlife presenter said softly, and we are going to do something to protect this beautiful world, then all of us will be very pleased. Well, it has. In Waitrose last week, I witnessed a small revolution. Voices were raised in concern. Gone were the typical everyday issues such as, "Where can I find an organic partridge?" or, there's an unexpected middle-aged man in my bagging area. No. What was being asked with urgency was when was Waitrose going to phase out plastic coffee cups stacked up to the ceiling? We're all fed up with unpacking our shopping only to find, after putting the food away, we've a bag of plastic bigger than the food bag we brought home. After 2 weeks, my green bin contains my weight in cardboard. My avocados come so well wrapped, I'm sure their night flight is more comfortable than a seat in economy. But it's one thing that really upsets Hampshire residents other than child cruelty and speaking harshly to a black Labrador, then it's the unnecessary cutting down of trees. We now regard trees as complex micro-ecosystems, links in a chain of support providing clean air and vital habitats for diverse bird, bat and insect species. Often they also provide beautiful canopies, which make us feel better just by looking at them. Every diminution of our local tree and wildlife population has a negative impact on our ecosystem. And anyone who doesn't believe in global warming should be strapped to a melting iceberg and floated in front of a starving polar bear. Public opinion, especially amongst young people, is now intolerant of short-term, thoughtless and destructive policies towards our green heritage. At least Hampshire Council's crime against the ecosystem last week could result in a much-needed shake-up of legislation so it comes up to date and is fit for purpose. More trees should be subject to tree protection orders, and TPO offers given more resources and powers. Communities should rewrite design statements to give greater security to green amenity. How many residents live with the ugly consequences of garden grab developers felling trees, ripping out hedges? Incentivize heritage trees and traditional hedge planting with modest council tax rebates. If roosting birds are a problem, plant some more trees somewhere else and ask RSPB volunteers to help. The fury of residents has been inspiring. It may not be enough. Continuous vocal pressure, protesting, and being a complete nuisance are vital. We must keep the grim reapers at bay to save this green and pleasant land.
Thank you, David.
Here.
Yes, I enjoyed that.
Excellent. Very lively article.
Yes. Right, well, we now have letters to the editor, and Margot is going to read the first one, please.
Yes, back to the Gore Blimey from the...
Oh, really?
Oh. Yes.
Not in the Hampshire Chronicle, surely.
No. But we start with the old chestnut of the NHS crisis, as commented on by Peter Rees. Sir, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Trust are to be congratulated for being awarded extra funding. They have exceeded expectations and show exemplary leadership in their care of patients, more than can be said of the government that controls the purse strings. More intent on mass privatisation and profit for business, not patients. On the day when Carillion goes into administration, the Tory government continues not to serve the nation. The NHS is enduring a national winter crisis. Winter pressures, predicted by the government, but not funded for, has meant unacceptable waits for patients, delays in treatment or discharge and unsafe care. Patients are being treated in ambulances because the Tories have cut bed space to the bone in every trust. People are suffering the indignity of being examined on trolleys and in corridors because there is not space for dignity or privacy. NHS staff, including GPs, are at risk because of the consistently long hours they are working. They give themselves selflessly to their patients, regardless of their own health and well-being. This crisis was predicted by NHS England. The Secretary of State compounded the emergency by cancelling all planned surgery in January. This is quite likely to become the norm, to be followed by a repetition in February. There are simple answers. More funding to allow hospitals and primary care services to increase capacity and maintain services. Funding to allow for increasing the workforce, training and capacity. Appropriately integrated social care to improve patient flow. The investment and delivery of a radical upgrade of measures to prevent ill health and hospital admissions. An honest debate about what kind of health and social care system people should expect and how funding can be sustained. Planning for better NHS funding over 15 to 20 years through a hypothecated ring-fenced tax mechanism is an absolute priority. But planning for next winter is an urgent necessity if we are to avoid the totally Tory-created, unacceptable condition of our NHS. So writes Peter Rees, chairman with the Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This next letter on the same subject is from Mr. Ian McNab, FRCS, TR and Orth, South Central Regional Council Chairman of the British Medical Association. Sir, yet again the NHS finds itself in a very difficult position as the inevitable pressures characteristic of the busy winter period have left healthcare services struggling to cope. A&E performance figures for December were the worst on record, and at major A&E departments in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, just 71.8% of patients were seen within the four-hour target, below the national average of 77.3%. There is, of course, a story behind each of these statistics, a story of a patient who, despite the best efforts of hard-working staff who have been tirelessly grafting in increasingly difficult conditions, is not getting the level of care they ultimately deserve from the NHS. And there is, of course, the wider story, the story of a government who, despite repeated warnings over the pressure of the NHS will face this winter, failed to adequately fund services to prepare them for the inevitable challenges ahead. Politicians of all parties must come together and work towards a long-term funding plan for the NHS that will reverse this dangerous tide and ensure a more sustainable future. That's from Mr. Ian McNab, who is the chairman of South Central Regional Council of the BMA, Tavistock Square, London.
This next letter brings us to the prospect of the hotel in central Winchester. Sir, oh dear. A hotel, but not for cars, chronicled January 25th. The staff and guests would arrive on flying saucers, and the greens would be over the moon. Has someone forgotten that travel lodges are for travellers who in the main travel in motor cars? The nearest car park is the much-treasured Colebrook Street car park, and although hotel guests would probably find places to park there after 5:30 p.m, they would not necessarily be away early the next morning when the shopkeepers and shoppers need to park there. Having lost the ground-level car park in Chesil Street, woe betide anyone who tries to hijack the Colebrook Street one. And that letter is from Rosemary Poole of St James Villas, Winchester.
Another letter on the same subject. Excuse me. This is written by Michael Carden. and it's headed Blandness Again. Sir, I have been quoted in your columns as favourably disposed towards a new hotel replacing the next shop in the High Street. And it is true that this was my first reaction before seeing the proposals. So I took care to add that much would depend on the design. That was in Hampshire Chronicle, January 18th. Right. Carrying on. Now the planning application drawings are available, I remain content with the change of use. However, the elevations are as disappointing as I feared they might be. It is not that they are incompetent or ugly, and in their way it could be said to be an improvement on the street scene, being completely unremarkable, unlike the existing incongruous concrete-framed design. Once more, as we see so often in Winchester, the proposal emulates the bland appearance of its 20th century neighbours without any attempt to design something worthier of our own period and the character of the city, or to reinterpret the more vibrant appearance of Winchester's older streets, especially in relation to their rhythm and texture. Sir Hugh Casson attempted this in St George's Street, and once properly refurbished, I believe the Casson block would come to be admired as it was when first built, as an imaginative approach to the reintroduction of rhythm and texture across a wide frontage. Two other points are worth mentioning. The total absence of parking provision for hotel guests may or may not impose noticeable strain on central area parking space. But if it encourages more visitors to come by public transport or to leave their cars outside the overcrowded city centre, the scheme should be welcome. Secondly, one hopes that the hotel's entrance on Market Street and its provision of internal bin storage might lead to a reversal of the permanent display of bins that disfigure this end of the street. And that is written by Michael Carden, RIBA, Edgar Road, Winchester.
Angus Somerville, who's chairman of the Independent Monitoring Board of the prison, writes on the prison crisis. Sir, recent publicity that Her Majesty's Prison, Winchester, has been placed in special measures refer to the findings highlighted by the annual report of the Prison's Independent Monitoring Board, or the IMB, for the year ending May the 31st, 2017, published in December. In it, the IMB raised very serious concerns about a range of issues, notably 4 deaths in custody, inadequate staffing, a subterranean segregation unit, inadequate health care, and dilapidated Victorian buildings. The regime, which was a direct consequence of a shortage of staff, bordered on the inhumane for prisoners, frustrating the efforts of staff to provide purposeful activity and rehabilitation. The report also recognised a number of positives, however, including a resilient workforce who worked hard in very stressful conditions, ongoing initiatives introduced by the Governor, exploiting some operational flexibility offered by pathway status, and a more multidisciplinary approach to the needs of complex prisoners. Since the period reported on, the IMB has noted continued considerable endeavour against a backdrop of the same insufficient staffing, exacerbated by the lack of targeted salary increases received by many other prisons in the southern region, the prevalence of intoxicating substances, and poor environment. Although there have been advances in some areas, we consider it unreasonable to expect the prison to achieve the transformation it is striving for without help. My board colleagues and I are pleased that the Ministry of Justice has recognised the significant challenges that the prison has been dealing with and accepted that it needs additional support and resources. We will continue to monitor progress as the Special Measures Improvement Plan is developed and implemented, conscious that the necessary resources will need to be invested in the longer term to ensure the benefit to be realised from this time-limited intervention has traction thereafter. So writes Angus Somerville, Chairman of the Independent Monitoring Board, Her Majesty's Prison, Winchester, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Brian Parker writes about a number of things, I think.
Okay.
So, firstly, regarding the article headlined GP Surgery, Chronicle, January the 18th, if Councillor Kim Gottlieb does own St Clement's Surgery, then surely he should immediately step down from office because of the obvious conflict of interest given the situation with the future of Silver Hill. And as for relocating the surgery to the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street, surely that just reduces parking and increases the need for it. Secondly, regarding the Wheeler's bus that got stuck on the High Street and the response from your correspondent from Week, I witnessed this and I understand that the driver simply lost his way and the bus didn't manage to achieve more than 5 miles an hour. The barriers are there to prevent a high-speed entry into the High Street, which they provide perfectly well from both ends. And as for the comment, no entry, were they joking or was that supposed to be serious? That's from Brian Parker, The Hawthorns, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter comes from Peter Marsh, the former Deputy Chief Education Officer, Chief CEO, I always get that
Chief name. Executive Officer.
Executive, yes.
Yeah.
That's what comes of having spent my life in education. Sir, I welcome the joined-up approach announced by local charities and the City Council to tackle homelessness and coordinate services between them. However, for the leader of the City Council to suggest, on the evidence that there are just 6 people sleeping rough on our city streets, that this is not a political issue, simply beggars belief. This government continues to choose to subsidise the dubiously effective home buy scheme and has slashed investment in genuinely affordable social rented homes from £2 billion a year to zero. Whether it's children trapped in family homes into their 30s, people sleeping in night shelters, young people and adults sofa surfing, families facing the regular threat of eviction due to insecure short-term private tenancies, or others simply unable to afford to buy, building new affordable housing and ending homelessness is a political choice.
Who's that written by?
That was Peter Marsh, the former Deputy Chief Executive Officer of the Housing Corporation, and the address is Southgate Street, Winchester.
Thank you, David. The next letter is written by Peter Innes, and it's headed Separate Traffic. Sir, others have pointed out the UK Highways' very dangerous proposal for the route from the new elevated roundabout junction to the A33. That was in Hampshire Chronicle Letters and Comment, January 25th. With a bit of calculation, the actual weaving distance between the hatched markings is just 370 metres. At a probable 60 miles an hour, the time to cover this distance will be just 13 seconds. In such a short time, it is obviously impossible, even in light traffic, to enter the slow lane of a fast through road such as the uninterrupted A34, weave into its fast lane and then exit onto the A33. A lower speed limit will be of little benefit, even if it is fully complied with. However, there is a perfectly feasible alternative. The A33 slip lane should run under the A34 link by separating from the M3 northbound link slightly later. The bridge involved would just be marginally widened, and it would then run parallel to the A34 link on its right-hand side, preferably remaining separate until joining the existing road. If space is unavailable for complete separation, the A33 link might perhaps form a properly dedicated and demarcated third lane on the right of the A34. This would cost a little more than the UK highway scheme, but with huge benefits for traffic flow and safety. With the small scale of the scheme, as illustrated in the brochure, one cannot be certain, but the A34 northbound seems to have been given no hard shoulder within the area of this proposal. If so, what an appalling omission. That was written by Peter in his Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
Now, Eric Horn, he writes on the Water Garden. Sir, on the Colebrook Street Water Gardens, over many years I have leaned on the railing and contemplated the still water and the lovely magnolia and the east end of the cathedral, which forms the splendid backdrop to the scene. No man could do better. But now it seems someone may be trying. If given the chance, he will no doubt create something which pleases him. Never mind the rest of us and whatever it is, it will be here for a long time, unlike the perpetrator. According to the Chronicle report, this beautiful and peaceful piece of our heritage has, quote, development potential, unquote, so says the Janjian 18th. Who says so? Who has put the idea into someone's head that here is an opportunity to make money? Has the planning office been consulted? Or English Heritage? This is a conservation area. Is this once inviolable classification now meaningless? One is slightly suspicious given the agent's bold statement that there is, quote, development potential, unquote. Of course, these very words bring joy to an estate agent's heart. That is his job, to make money. Nothing else counts. But where are the public benefactors these days? Those local worthies who make their money from business in the city and who would give something in return to the city, partly to ensure that they would not be forgotten after they had gone, but also in appreciation of their gain from the city. Surely there is an ideal opportunity for somebody or an individual to give something back. There is no shortage of candidates. The City Council, for a start, who can throw our money at projects which will be of benefit to relatively few. Winchester BID, the University, the Cathedral even. After all, it is an important part of the environment. Even without individual involvement, there are quite a few possible public benefactors who are, it seems to me, keeping very quiet at the time when they might be doing something positive. I note with some trepidation from a Chronicle update of January the 18th that an offer is being considered. Could it be that there is someone out there who does have our city at heart? Or perhaps not. Eric Horn, Sussex Street, Winchester.
This next letter is from Martin de Retuerto, Assistant Director of Estates, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. I do beg your pardon. And it's to do with starlings.
Oh, no, again.
Yes, or connected with starlings, anyway. Sir, the spectacle of thousands of starlings swooping in unison is breathtaking at this time of year, and the murmurations in the heart of the city have clearly captured the imagination of so many in recent weeks, chronicled January the 25th. We know, sadly, that many children and adults are disconnected from the natural environment, so much so that even the names from nature, words like oak, adder, and indeed starling, are being stripped from the Oxford Children's Dictionary. We need nature, and nature needs us, so this opportunity for inspiration on our doorstep is vital to ensuring people connect with and care about the world around them. This is the only way we will secure nature's long-term recovery. You might assume from the sight of these huge flocks that starlings are thriving, but loss of land to development and farming, pollution and other factors have led to a sharp decline in these impressive birds across the UK. The decision by Hampshire County Council to cut down the main roosting trees at Winnell is disappointing and unhelpful. The disturbance will put more pressure on the starlings at a time when food and energy are in short supply, and this move is so at odds with the council's wider aims of nurturing wild places and creating more opportunities for people to enjoy them. I really hope that in the future they will embrace this natural showstopper and think about the bigger picture beyond a bit of mess. That's from Martin de Retuerto, Assistant Director of Estates, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust.
This letter concerns the troubled Wessex Cancer Trust store on Stoney Lane in Wick. And the letter is accompanied by a picture of the store. And it refers back to a letter in the Chronicle on January the 30th. Sir, when I receive a compliment on what I'm wearing, I'm often able to say it comes from the Wessex Cancer Trust shop in Stoney Lane. I've been telling friends for a number of years what a gem of a place it is, along with the more recently opened Countess Mountbatten boutique next door, offering a more pleasant and interesting shopping experience than a typical high street chain. Our family was supported by both charities during our daughter's terminal illness 10 years ago, so I have since taken items into the shops to sell whenever I can, and am always impressed by the friendly, hard-working volunteers. On every occasion I've stopped for a browse and come away with something delightful for a very reasonable price, always in immaculate condition and sometimes brand new. I was sorry to read on these pages of problems experienced by the Wessex Cancer Trust shop, and do hope they can be resolved. And that letter's from Jill Wilson, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester.
Now, another letter on the subject of the A34, and it's written by Keith Webb. Sir, a major priority of those planning the changes must be to ensure that the inevitable eventual upgrading of the A34 to a motorway can be carried out without having to make further changes to the junction when this happens. Built into the changes must also be the provision of adding a third lane to the M3, something that should have been done years ago. Even before these changes are made, huge improvement to traffic flow in Eastern Lane could be made very cheaply by constructing mini roundabouts at the junctions with Winnell Manor Road and Moorside Road. I have been asking for this for years and the cost would be minimal. And that is written by Keith Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester. And that's the end of our letters. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we go on to Belgarum, who gives us an alternative view of the news, starting with Margot, please.
And his first alternative view is called Learning to Love the Michelin Accolade. It looks like acclaimed Winchester host David Nicholson at the Black Rat restaurant has embraced Michelin. A few years back, when the eatery on Chesil Street was first awarded the coveted accolade, Mr. Nicholson saw it as a bit of a poisoned chalice. He told Belgarum that getting the star didn't mean the restaurant was out of this world, any more than not having one, or even losing one, meant it was second rate. And of course, Belgara may be wrong, but the sign recently fixed to the repainted building looks like Mr. Nicholson has finally learned to love the star. The eagle-eyed will spot that a giant painted rodent now adorns the facade. And I have a photograph here of the sign, and I can't see the giant painted rodent on it, but it just says 2018 Michelin, and it's got a flower outline and something beneath it. I think it's probably a knight showing the award from the Michelin. So well done, Michael. David Nicholson, I'm sorry.
Winter woes for Saints star, that's a question. Saints striker Manolo Gabbiadini looked less than impressive in Winchester last week as rumours surfaced about his future at the club. The Italian, who came to the South Coast from Napoli in a £14 to £15 million transfer on January the 31st last year, was spotted looking forlorn as he left Cafe Nero in Winchester High Street. This week, rumours began to surface about his future at the club, but Saints manager Maurizio Pellegrino stated the club would stand firm and turn down any bids for Gabbiadini. Among those rumoured to be showing interest in him were Italian Serie A club Bologna, where he previously enjoyed a season-long loan scoring 6 goals, one fewer than his current total with Saints. One has to wonder whether the thought of not being able to return to his former friends was playing on his mind. A number of Saints players have been known to live in Winchester, including Stephen Davis, Florin Gardos and Jordi Classi.
Another question raised. Trees will be saved, but at what cost? Hundreds of trees are set to be reprieved, with news that the City Council is no longer going to print on paper its council reports and agendas. Many people will shrug their shoulders and say the internet has been a part of our lives for 20 years. What's the problem? Well, the issue is that there are still many people who do not have access to digital services, and they will be effectively cut off from decision-making.
Thank you. One wonders whether they ought to write it on vellum. The last of the Belgarum items is TripAdvisor hails Winchester, apparently. Valentine's Day is fast approaching, and some Belgarum readers may not be surprised to hear that Winchester has been named one of the country's top cities for a romantic getaway. It was among the top five for a romantic trip, according to TripAdvisor's holiday lettings. Using an algorithm analysing ratings and reviews for all UK properties, holiday lettings identified some of the UK's best reviewed cities. Other places cited were Bath and Salisbury, with some more surprising results, such as Inverness and Dundee. Right, well, we now go on to what I usually refer to as hysterical items, but they're actually historical items, and we start with 25 years ago from Margot, please.
Right. So 25 years ago would be Friday, January the 29th, 1993. A report compiled by Hampshire Police Research Department shows that there is sexual harassment of women in the force. Research based on half a dozen forces shows that women police officers are subjected to an unacceptable level of physical and verbal abuse. This is now followed by a quotation. There is a problem in the way in which women officers are treated or mistreated, said Hampshire Chief Constable John Hodnott after a meeting of the Association of Chief Police Officers Council last week. He said the research had produced complaints from women officers about abuse, including bottom pinching, sexist remarks, and innuendo.
This is also 25 years ago, so that's 29th of January 1993. Robinson Crusoe star David Essex escaped from his desert island stage for a few hours on Wednesday to a New Hampshire sporting facility for the disabled. The singer chatted and joked with disabled youngsters at the Queen Elizabeth II Activities Centre, Upper Hamble Country Park, Burselden, before dashing back for a matinee performance at Southampton's Mayflower Theatre. Cutting the tape on the new stable block at the centre, he commented, "You should all be very proud of this brand new and wonderful facility." More than 150 people crowded the stable block as the musical star greeted fans, signed autographs, and even kissed a baby.
Oh. Really?
Now to 50 years ago, which was Saturday, February the 3rd, 1968. We are now approaching what is usually the worst fire danger period, February and March. At this time of year, in spite of the sodden state of the forest, a few hours of drying winds will render the dead vegetation from last summer highly flammable. All static precautions have been taken, and every morning the fire duty officer decides what action is necessary for that day. That is, which fire towers shall be manned and at what times. There are four fire towers in the New Forest: Emery Down, Fritham, Verily, and the Nodes.
And the second item from 50 years ago is concerning Swanmore County Secondary School Young Farmers Club, who have achieved outstanding success on Saturday when their public speaking team won the National Junior Public Speaking Contest held in London. The competition was organised by the National Federation of Young Farmers Clubs, and the Swanmore team were representing Hampshire. Those competing were Barry Taylor, aged 16, who was the chairman, Colin Taylor, aged 14, who was the speaker, and chose his subject, The Story of a Lighthouse. The proposer of the motion of thanks was Christopher Tribe, aged 15 years. The team was chosen to represent Hampshire from the County Public Speaking Finals, which were held last year, and had been trained by Mrs. Jenny Burden, who is the club leader of Swanmore School Young Farmers Club and a teacher at the school.
100 years ago, Saturday, February the 2nd, 1918. It is with regret that I notice that advertisements are now being inserted in many newspapers by buyers of moleskins. Far too many moles are trapped already because their presence on cultivated land is supposed to be harmful. And if the unfortunate little animals are also to be sought out and killed for the sake of their velvet skins, it seems possible that the race may at last be in danger of perishing altogether. It is by no means certain that the mole should be regarded as an enemy to agricultural different people. Agriculture. Different people hold different opinions about his activities. Sir Henry Ryder Haggard, whose knowledge and experience concerning everything connected with farming cannot be called into question, which he has a good word to say for moles. "Farmers dislike moles," he writes in A Farmer's Year, "and allege much evil against them. But I believe they do more good than harm, at least on pastures, by bringing up so many tons of fresh earth from the subsoil, which, when harrowed and brushed, gives the grasses a dressing of new mould that must benefit them much."
Also from 100 years ago, that's February 1918, a meeting of the League of Honour was held at Holy Trinity Hall, Winchester, on Tuesday evening, at which the principal speaker was Miss Finlay, mistress of the Winchester School for Girls. There was a numerous attendance of members. The proceedings opened with a hymn and prayer by Reverend John Smith, St. Cross. The President, in her few introductory remarks, recalled the watchwords of the League: prayer, purity, temperance, and said she should also like to emphasise the old English word, loyalty. The President urged that members should recognise how much we owe to our present King and Queen, and how splendidly and heroically they had faced the heavy burden placed upon them by the present difficult time. She made bold to say that no one had shown a more noble example of courage and service than our English King and Queen, and there was great applause.
200 years ago, on Monday, February the 2nd, 1818, on Tuesday, the house of Mr. Titridge in Andover was attempted to be broken into, but Mr. Titridge, being alarmed by the dog and coming downstairs, induced the robbers to decamp before they had effected their purpose. On the following morning, as Mr. W.P. Garrett was returning home from a party, he was met just outside of the town by two men with sack bags on their shoulders. Upon being interrogated as to who they were, etc., they threw down their burdens and took to their heels. The bags were found to contain potatoes, which had been stolen from W. Loscombe, Esquire. As the persons are well known, there is little doubt that they will soon be brought to justice, as many depredations of the same kind have lately been committed.
From the remarkable mildness of the weather, a hedge sparrow's nest with 5 eggs and also a wren's nest with 2 eggs were taken by some boys in the vicinity of Alresford last Sunday.
And on the same day, a fatal accident occurred on Saturday afternoon on the River Thames near Egham. 4 men implied in ballasting gravel by the contractors for constructing a new lock at Bell Weir, overloaded their boat so that it swamped and immediately sank. One escaped, but the other 3, of the names of Evans, Osborne and Cooper, were drowned.
And finally, from February the 2nd, 1818, 200 years ago, an inquest was taken by Mr. Shabir on Monday last at Winchfield on the body of Thomas Marshall, a shopkeeper at Blackwater, who was found dead in a ditch by the side of the common, into which it was supposed he had fallen the Friday before, and being unable to extricate himself, was suffocated by the water with which the previous heavy rains had filled the ditch. Verdict, accidental death.
Right, well, we now move on to what's coming up for the coming week and beyond. Well, on stage, there's a young people's theatre company called Encore, who are staging a production of Fiddler on the Roof at the Theatre Royal. A very talented group. This is from the 15th to the 17th of February, 7:30 and 2:30 p.m. On the matinees on Tuesday, on Thursday and Saturday. The box office telephone number 01962 840 440. And a second young people's theatre production. This is the Chesil Youth Theatre. Both the juniors and the seniors are performing on the 8th and 9th of February at 7:30 p.m. The juniors are presenting The King's New Clothes, so the Hans Christian Andersen story. And the seniors are presenting 2 items, The Perils of Pauline, a light-hearted homage to Saturday morning pictures, remember those? And the second item is Abich Macht Frei, and John will be telling me that I've pronounced that very badly, a dramatic portrayal of life in the Jewish ghetto. At the Lights in Andover on February the 8th at 7:30 p.m. is Pam Ayers. For information and tickets, call the box office on 01264 68 01 not enough letters there I won't give you that number because it's incorrect. And lastly, Thorndon Hall Performing Arts Centre, Chandler's Ford, Thursday, February the 8th, 7:15, a live screening of Tosca, performed by the Royal Opera. That box office number, I think, is all there. 02380246555. 02380246555. I think I got that about right. Well, that's all of our regular features. Thank you to you all. But before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are waiting with mounting anticipation for the lighting up times. Well, this week the sun will rise at about 7:40 a.m. and it'll set at about 7:30 p.m. Well, on to items of general news, with Margot starting us off, please.
Healthy eating campaign. Hampshire County Council is in supporting a new campaign to encourage parents and carers to choose healthier snacks and reduce their children's sugar intake. Sugar Smart aims to improve youngsters' health and by reducing children's daily sugar intake by providing parents with online help and advice on purchasing healthier snacks, as well as providing promotional offers on a range of healthier snacks, including malt loaf, lower sugar fromage frais, and no added sugar drinks, as well as money off vouchers for fruit and vegetables at selected supermarkets. Nationally, half of children's sugar intake, currently around 7 cubes a day, comes from unhealthy snacks and sugary drinks. Eating too much sugar can lead to serious health problems. To help parents keep track of their children's sugar, an updated Change for Life food scanner app, which shows how much sugar, salt and saturated fat is inside various food and drink items, is also available on iTunes Store or Google Play. Councillor Patricia Stallard, Executive Member for Public Health, said, "In Hampshire, one in five children entering school is overweight or obese, and by the age of 10 to 11, this rises to almost one in three. We know how difficult it can be to monitor the amount of sugar and fat we and our families really consume, so by supporting this campaign, we aim to help parents to make healthy eating choices."
Local is key ingredient at food show. The cream of the region's food producers gathered in Hampshire to market their wares to top buyers. The local produce show was celebrating its 10th anniversary, and the event was opened by 2016 MasterChef winner Jane Devonshire, who lives near Alsford. More than 70 stands promoting everything from marshmallows to meat pies and water to whiskey filled the function rooms of the Hilton at the Aegeus Bowl near Eastleigh. Business South organises the show to bring small independent food and drink producers together with chefs and buyers, caterers and buyers from cruise companies, hotels, pubs and shops. "I firmly believe that the best ingredients are seasonal and local," said Jane, who is soon to bring out her first cookery book of gluten-free recipes. Among the speakers at the event were Rupert Holloway, the founder of Dorset-based Conquer Gin, who 2 years after opening his distillery is selling his produce to Waitrose, M&S and Harvey Nichols. Laura Trapnell, partner at law firm Paris Smith, who became a show sponsor this year, spoke brand protection and international trademark registration. This year's event was also sponsored by Hampshire Fair, Hampshire Farmers Markets, New Forest Mark, Southern Co-op and Cavendish Ship Stores.
Care Service saved hospital £624,000. A Hampshire care provider claims to have saved Winchester's hospital around £624,000 over the past 10 months by helping people in their homes. Multi-award-winning firm Bluebird Care says since its new service was rolled out last year, it has managed to keep nearly 350 people from being admitted to the city's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The average cost to the NHS for a patient being admitted to hospital is £1,800. The scheme sees GPs, district nurses and community care teams refer their patients with acute illnesses to the Bluebird Cares Joint Emergency Team, who then assess the patient within a few hours and immediately put in place emergency care in the patient's home, helping to ease the number of beds taken up in hospitals by elderly patients. The firm currently works with 7 GP surgeries across Winchester and Eastleigh. Philip Hyden, director at Mid Hampshire Healthcare, which represents GPs in the county, said, "It has long been known that with correct community social care support, thousands of people that are unnecessarily admitted to hospital can be cared for just as well, if not better, in their own homes, and Bluebird Care were the perfect partner to deliver this." Responding to the claim that the service has saved hundreds of thousands of pounds, Julie Maskery, Chief Operating Officer at Hampshire's Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust is a very enthusiastic supporter of the Bluebird Jet scheme and fully recognises the success of keeping a large number of potential patients safe in their homes. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust and West Hampshire CCG has supported further work with Bluebird over the winter. However, despite this very successful intervention, attendances to all our emergency departments have increased by 2.9% in the current financial year compared with last year."
Thousands of hours of unpaid work. Offenders in Hampshire have carried out thousands of hours of community service in the last year, new figures have revealed. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Rehabilitation Company says it has delivered 115,252 hours during the past 12 months. The group is responsible for supervising offenders on community payback and ensuring they comply with their sentence. With the national wage standing at £7.83, that equates to more than £902,000 of work delivered. Those ordered to take on unpaid community work participate in a range of manual tasks, including removing graffiti, litter picking, clearing parks and cemeteries, renovating buildings, and work in charity shops. Magistrates or judges can sentence offenders to carry out anything from 40 to 300 hours of unpaid work as part of their order, and must include a minimum of a day's work, lasting at least 7 hours, once a week. The court can also impose sentences for intensive community payback orders, which mean they must complete 28 hours of unpaid work every week.
Council tax set to rise by 3%. Winchester's finance chief has revealed plans to raise council tax by nearly 3%, as well as a raft of savings measures to counter a fall in government grants. Councillor Guy Ashton also reinforced the City Council's entrepreneurial approach to generate new income to avoid a hole in the city's finances. He said, "Over the last 2 to 3 years, our funds from central government have gone from £3 million to zero. So that's a lot of money we've got to save. If we did nothing, we'd be in deficit in 3 to 4 years' time." Figures show that the council now relies more heavily on council tax, which is predicted to generate £7.7 million in 2018-19, following a rise of 2.9%, compared to just £6.7 million in 2015-16. The council has also invested more than £22 million in a number of projects to generate new funding, including Winchester Bus Station and the new Sports and Leisure at Bar End, due to begin construction early next year. It also plans to make savings of £671,000 by April next year by making council processes more efficient, increasing planning fees, and moving more services online to reduce print costs. The budget for 2018-19 will now be discussed by Winchester City Council's Cabinet on February the 14th before going to full council on February the 22nd.
Council presses on with new approach. Winchester Civic Chiefs agreed to refresh the council's strategy until 2020 at a cabinet meeting held in Alsford last week. The current city council's strategy document was adopted in February last year. Council leader Caroline Hoddle said that the fundamental goals of the scheme to improve business, housing, the environment and health in the district had not changed, but had been revised to take a more entrepreneurial approach to achieving targets and provide a greater level of transparency via quarterly reports. The strategy document is a good indicator of the direction of travel of Winchester City Council, she said. When discussing the aims of the document, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for professional services, called the Council's current aim to provide 600 new homes by 2020 as tremendously brave, raising concerns over whether this could be delivered. Councillor Horrell said she believed the target was reasonable, and as a council it was something that they must see through and deliver, and that they would be seeking government grants to help with the ambition. However, she did concede that the ability to build homes is always about land and having people to support these new developments. When questioned by Councillor Guy Ashton on how the council's movement strategy would affect policy, Councillor Horrell said that ultimately it would help to improve the effectiveness of how people moved around the city, and that it had been created with the help of Hampshire County Council and would assess some of their current problems. Councillor Robert Humby said that it was important to note that the strategy applied to the whole district, which stretches from Mitchell Dever down to Southwick and Hambledon, not just the city. Some critics have said the entrepreneurial approach is highly risky and that the City Council could end up endangering, even losing, substantial sums of money. The council strategy document is currently available online at www.winchester.gov.uk/about/strategies/council-strategy-2017-2020.
Excellent. I'm sure we just memorised that, so we don't need to repeat it.
Margaret, would you like to give us a
one, please? Oh, you won't be mentally exerted now. Meals on Wheels is set for expansion. Hampshire County Council has extended its Meals on Wheels scheme to include vulnerable younger adults that have trouble preparing meals. The new service is due to start on October the 1st and will be offered to adults aged 18 plus who have difficulty preparing food or managing and maintaining nutrition, such as the disabled, those with mental health issues, and people with a history of substance misuse. The council will invest up to £16.4 million in the new contract that will also continue to provide meals for older Hampshire residents. The service delivers a two-course hot lunch with the additional option of afternoon tea. Meals on Wheels drivers are also trained to carry out well-being checks. This ensures that well-being and safety concerns are identified and timely action taken. Drivers can report concerns to the relevant council team or call for emergency services. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Health, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, said, "Meals on Wheels offers a vital lifeline for many residents in terms of ensuring good nutrition, which is so important for good physical and mental health. Extending the service to younger people is an obvious next step for us as we seek to support all adults to live independently in their communities. Sometimes a Meals on Wheels visit is the only social interaction a person may have all day, so the service also plays a valuable role in helping to prevent social isolation. On On average, there are currently 1,770 customers receiving Meals on Wheels in Hampshire from 1 to 7 days a week, and nearly 35,000 lunchtime meals are delivered each month. Over 64% of customers are aged 75 and over, with 36% between 55 and 75 years.
Campaigners praise curbside glass recycling plan. Recycling campaigners in Winchester have welcomed council plans to introduce curbside glass collections following a petition to make the city greener. Glass recycling campaigner Linda Murphy, who recently started the petition calling on Winchester City Council to have glass collections added to domestic waste collection services, said the news was a great step forward. However, the new collections would not be introduced until next year, when the service is put out to tender again. Although it is not yet a done deal, councillors said that they were looking to discuss the feasibility of a monthly curbside glass collection service for all households as part of the revised specification for its waste collection contract. Councillor Jane Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, added, "We have asked officers to include curbside glass in their negotiations for the new contract following feedback from members of the public. We are committed to improving and maintaining the natural environment and also listen and respond to the needs of our residents." The move follows news in December that although recycling rates achieved by councils across the south have risen for the fourth year running, many councils in the region are failing to meet a national target of 50%.
M3 bottleneck project needs to start sooner. Work on one of Winchester's worst bottlenecks for traffic needs to begin sooner, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce has said. The plan for a multi-million pound upgrade for the M3 Junction 9 was originally delayed by highway bosses to avoid a clash with other schemes it is running. It was due to start in March 2020, but was pushed back to mid-2021. It is set to be fully open to traffic by 2023. Mark Balsh, Head of Policy and Representation at Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, said, "The Hampshire Chamber of Commerce is very supportive of this project, and we want to get the M3 Junction 9 moving. The proposal itself is welcome, and the initial plans look very good. It remains the delivery time that is the issue. The Hampshire Chamber of Commerce's call to action to members and your readers is to provide data to support Highways England in this project as we endeavour to shorten the time period from the current expected start date of June 2021. Also, to respond to the current consultation, or let me have their comments to collate into our own response before the closing date of Monday, February the 19th. He added that there has been greater representation from the Chamber's members at a business briefing last Thursday. As reported in the Chronicle, the congested motorway junction is set to be redesigned in a scheme set to cost around £100 million. It will be adapted to create dedicated free-flow lanes, allowing drivers travelling between the M3 and the A34 to avoid using the junction roundabout. The roundabout itself would be redesigned into a dumbbell layout to reduce congestion and improve safety, while improved pedestrian and cycling routes will complete the gap in the national cycling network.
A potential buyer is keen to preserve water garden. A Winchester beauty spot could be kept for the benefit of residents and visitors, despite concerns it would be snapped up by developers. The Chronicle has learned that one of the potential buyers would be interested in keeping the water garden, which backs onto Winchester Cathedral Close. As previously reported, the garden has gone on the market for £100,000, prompting fears the informal tourist attraction could be redeveloped. The site in Colebrook Street features a picturesque garden with a stream running through. Among those raising concerns about the sale was the City of Winchester Trust, which was set up to preserve the city's history. A spokesman said, independent valuations have put the garden at approximately £10,000, and the City of Winchester Trust is extremely concerned that the asking price of £100,000 and an overage clause on future residential development potential means that the vendor is hoping to attract development. The Trust is liaising with the Hampshire Gardens Trust, which is taking the lead on the best action to take to safeguard the garden. They have been in touch with the owner of the adjoining property, who is interested in purchasing the garden. Councillor Guy Ashton, City Council portfolio holder for finance, confirmed that he is not interested in buying the site which adjoins his home. Councillor Ashton said to the Hampshire Chronicle, the land used to go with the house, but when we bought it in 2007, the owner wanted to keep the garden as a sort of memento. Councillor Ashton added that the land was owned by Lady Barbara Calcutt, the widow of Sir David Calcutt, before she died last year. It was then passed on to her executor, who is selling the land.
Businesses come to aid of charity for homeless. Winchester's homeless charity has said its costs on food and other supplies has more than halved in the last year thanks to the generosity of supporters. Trinity Winchester, based at Derngate, used to spend £160 a week on food and other items. But thanks to donations from Sainsbury's, Tesco, Aldi, Pret a Manger, Marks and Spencer, Winchester Farmers Market stallholders, Pie Caramba, and local churches and groups, this has significantly reduced. This helps support more than 600 people Trinity works with each year. The Trinity has been operating in Winchester since the mid-1980s, initially in the Holy Trinity Church Hall on Upper Brook Street.
College bagpipers at Burns Lunch. Bagpipers from Winchester College entertained residents and staff at Brendan Care Nursing Home on Park Road to commemorate the life of Robert Burns. The six students, led by their teacher Jim Dawson, made a spectacular entrance and delivered a powerful performance for those at the lunch. The pupils from Winchester College were Ben Howman, Alistair Howman, Archie Sillers, Angus Robertson and William Spinks. There was then the chance to enjoy a Scottish fare of traditional neeps and tatties with numerous toasts. Janet Graham, activities coordinator at the home, said, "We were expecting one piper and were literally blown away when six pipers piped into our conservatory. It was a wonderful lunch which made many people very happy, and it was worth going the extra mile to arrange this fun event. Thank you, Winchester College. The private school has a long-running community service programme and are involved with work at local primary schools, the Hospital of St Cross and the Theatre Royal. It provides an eclectic range of worthwhile activities for over 300 senior boys. The pupils spend 2 hours each week volunteering across the city. The college aims to foster a caring ethos by engaging in weekly commitments of service to others, and that their volunteering will benefit the wider community. Work has included conservation with the Hampshire Wildlife Trust, clearing dishes at Winchester Church's night shelter, demonstrating scientific experiments in primary schools, helping with garden maintenance in local schools, creative work in special schools, teaching fly fishing to autistic children, assisting with meals at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, visiting elderly residents at local nursing homes, serving in charity shops, organising local science chess and ceramics clubs for youngsters. Busy young men.
TK Maxx set to open on March the 8th at 9 a.m. The wait is finally over. The opening date of a nationwide fashion chain in the Brooks Shopping Centre has been announced after months of waiting. High Street fashion chain TK Maxx will throw open its doors to shoppers at 9 a.m. on Thursday, March the 8th. The arrival forms part of a £1 million revamp at the Brooks to boost its appeal to shoppers. The 120,000 square foot shopping centre is currently home to shops including Primark, New Look, Waterstones, HMV and The Entertainer. But it also has several long-term empty units and has only been fully let for around a year since its opening in 1991.
Thief's new high-tech tool. Police have issued a warning after a suspected high-tech device was used to break into cars in Winchester. Officers believe a signal booster was used to get into the vehicles, allowing the thief to steal valuables inside. The device acts to strengthen to the... The device acts to strengthen the electronic signal produced by keys to unlock a car. PCSO Aaron Perry said, "The device acts as a signal booster and unlocks the car like normal." Keep your keys as far away from your car as possible, or place them inside a metal tin or a fridge, which stops the signals emitting from the keys. Never leave valuable items in your car. Police have issued the warning after two cars were broken into in Christchurch Road just before 9 p.m. on Thursday, January the 25th. A Samsung tablet, GoPro camera and designer sunglasses were stolen. The owner of one of the vehicles noticed the items had gone about an hour later. There was no sign of forced entry or damage and the car was still locked. Anyone with information is asked to call 101.
I'd like to know, of course, that John is an English teacher and he went a puce colour in trying to read that item. David.
A timely reminder here, deadline looms. Residents are being urged to have their say on plans for a major revamp of Winchester city centre before the deadline. The consultation over the plans for the Silver Hill 2 project, known officially as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, is due to end on Monday, February the 5th. The draft supplementary planning document, which sets out the vision for the city's Silver Hill area, is still available to view at the Winchester City Council office in Colebrook Street and libraries in Winchester, Alresford, Bishop's Waltham, Waterlooville, Eastleigh, Chandler's Ford, Fareham and Romsey. And the formal consultation will run until 12 p.m. on Monday, February the 5th.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. That concludes the readings from the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870370. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our editors, Sue Frayne, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And David Dalton.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in your wallet when you're finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible.